BCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at bcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And thank you for joining us today. This is a momentous time for our nation. Georgians went to the polls yesterday to cast votes for two Senate seats, which impact the majority party for the U.S. Senate. Today, the Save America March in Washington, D.C. Leading up to today, it was said it would be the largest rally in the history of our nation. President Trump addressing the crowd this morning. This afternoon, Congress convenes for the purpose of certifying the electoral votes from the states. The debate has been waged. Does the vice president have the authority to reject electoral college votes from states in which election fraud has been proven? I want you to listen now to an interview I recorded this morning with Rick Green, an attorney, constitutional expert, a former Texas state representative, and founder of the leadership group Patriot Academy. Rick, thank you for being with us here today.
Jim, always a pleasure, man. Thanks for having me back.
So let's first quickly hit the vote yesterday in Georgia. Georgians went to the polls. Your analysis of what's taken place there.
Well, you know, I think clearly there were irregularities once again. It's a broken system in Georgia, but you can't really blame it on that when half the state, even as close as it was, has given in to a Marxist philosophy, and you even have, frankly, believers coming out campaigning for an anti-biblical candidate. We've got a real problem culturally as well as just the mechanics of our election system. The leadership in Georgia could have fixed that election system. They had time to do that. They chose not to. That's very disappointing. But at this point, it looks like Georgia, of all places, is going to send the most left-leaning United States senators in Washington, D.C. Not California, not Massachusetts, not Oregon, but Georgia will have the most left-leaning United States senators in the country.
Are you concerned at all, Rick, regarding leading up to this, all of the absentee ballots, the early voting? I mean, can we trust the integrity of that process?
Not at all. No, I mean, that's the whole point, is that we've known this cheating was going on for years. Nobody did anything about it because it didn't have as big of an impact as what it has this year with the presidential election and now with these U.S. Senate races. There is no question that there's a lack of transparency, there's a lack of verification, and there's a refusal to let the legal remedies take place that are necessary to correct those problems. There's literally an ignoring of the facts right now. The courts refuse to hear these cases. They've not heard them on the merits. Even the weak Republican leadership in that state has refused to fix the system. And so now the citizens are going to have to be the ones to stand up and say enough is enough. So in the legislative session for Georgia this year, we're asking all believers in liberty, all that want to have a constitutional republic and not a dictatorship, absolutely need to lobby their legislators for election integrity, fix this system, and get back to a system that we can have faith in and believe in.
All the more reason why what happens in Congress today is so critically important. Rick Green is with us today, so let's get to the certification vote. Congress convening early afternoon today. First of all, what is the process? What's going to unfold before us? And then we'll talk about the vice president's role in all of this.
Well, normally, you know, this happens every 4 years, and normally there's all of about six people watching it on C-SPAN, and that's it. So it's typically a very ceremonial, rubber stamping of what happened in the states. Not since 1876 have we had one where we have disputed results from multiple states, and it's enough disputed results that it could determine the outcome of the election. And so when we hear talk of House members and Senate members objecting to some of those results, it's not that some people are trying to say that they're trying to overturn the election. None of these people objecting are trying to change the outcome. None of them are trying to overturn a state that voted for Biden. What they're doing is they're asking for verification and clarification of the actual results in that state. And what they're saying is that if a state cast their electoral votes unconstitutionally, if they broke the law in the way that they conducted their election, which is exactly what happened in four of these states, if that happened, then to accept those electors is to sign off on the lawlessness, is to say that that was okay, which means we'll get more of it. And so what they're doing when they come together here in just a little while, what they're doing is they're actually saying, as we open these ballots, we need to know which ones to open and count and make sure that we only count the ones that were cast constitutionally and legally.
Okay, so those when objection is raised, what happens at that point?
there's disagreement on how this plays out, and that's part of the novelty of it because it hasn't happened in so long. Some, if you only follow the Constitution itself and the 12th Amendment with Article 2, then the vice president is the one that decides which ones to count, and he will be the one to determine that. And so he has good constitutional standing for doing that if he chooses to do so today. If you follow the 1887 law that was passed to try to give some sort of process for this, it's an unconstitutional law, in my opinion, and in the opinion of, frankly, Democrats and Republicans alike over the past few years. They wouldn't admit that today, but in the past they've said that, because it changes the constitutional process, and it gives, frankly, it changes the decision-making power from the state legislature to decide how electors are chosen, which is what Article 2, Section 1 says, and it gives more power to the governor in a state to make that decision. The founders never wanted to see that, but that's what the 1887 law does. And so, depending on which you follow, or frankly, I think they'll probably try to follow a mix of that. And that means that under the 1887 law, what they'll do is they'll let objections take place, and then they'll split into the House and Senate sessions and take votes on the disputed states. When they do that, obviously the Democrats in the House will accept the Biden electors and reject the Republican electors. And more than likely, in the Senate, the same thing will happen. And that's why people are saying, wait a minute, is there a clear path here for Mike Pence to act unilaterally and choose on his own to say that one state or another, or that a state that cast their votes illegally will not be counted? And there is, Jim, there is historical precedent for that. There's been three vice presidents in the past that did exactly that. They made the decision on their own. Jefferson did that in 1800. Nixon did it in 1961 in counting the 1960 votes. And even Gore did that in 2000 when he refused to accept the objections of some folks over the Florida outcome. So there's precedent, historical precedent, and constitutional interpretation to back up any one of a number of actions that Pence could take.
Do we have any insight? I mean, Vice President Pence talked about this being the day. This is, you know, going to be the day. We're going to hear things out. Do we have any insight as to how he is going to act? Do we know where he stands on this constitutional question?
We don't. He had an interesting turn of phrase when he said we'll have our day in Congress instead of our day in court.
Right.
Because the courts have refused to hear this stuff. Some people are saying, oh, there's no disputed states. The courts looked at that and they said there's no problem. That's not true. There's no court that has actually heard the facts and heard the merits of any of these cases. They kicked all of it out based on technicalities, latches and standing and all these technicalities. They did not follow the Constitution. They did not follow the state laws. And the courts have absolutely failed us in that regard, not doing the one thing they should do, which is defend the Constitution and the rule of law. And so that leaves it to Congress at this point. And I think that's why he said that we'll have our day in Congress, that finally there'll be someone to look at the accusations and look at the different slates of electors and make a decision on what to do. That's not to say that he'll definitely do that. I'm sure he's getting advice that's conflicting and different experts telling him different things. And that's why, because of the history on this, he could be justified in taking several courses of action. Honestly, Jim, what I would love to see him do is kick it back to the states and say, look, I have seven states with dual electors. I have four that I know broke the law and did not follow the Constitution and had crazy elections changed at the last minute by governors. And so I'm going to put a pause here, and I'm going to ask for clarification from those state legislatures, not the governors. The legislatures are the only ones empowered under the Constitution. Now that they're back in session, and some of them now, all of them will be by next Tuesday, he could actually say that. He could say, we're just going to pause for a minute. We're going to do our own investigation. But in the meantime, I'm going to ask the states to send us verification, clarification of who they have chosen for president.
Have the dual electors that you referred to actually been sent to Congress? I mean, have states actually sent two sets of these, or have only one actually been filed in these states where the vote is suspect?
Well, very much like 1876, there are multiple slates that have been sent, and the thing that Congress has to decide is who sent them and who do we accept them from. The Constitution doesn't address that. It just says that the states will send it. And so that 1887 law, it has, it's very confusing and very poorly written, but it gives some credence to a Secretary of State signing it, some to a governor signing it. It kind of lets the governor have the most powerful voice in this, which is the, you know, giving constitutional power to somebody that the Constitution doesn't give power to. But the ones that the electors that were sent from a small group of legislators or from the Republican Party may be not accepted by Congress. And what people need to understand is that electors are chosen by the parties. The Republican Party meets in the summer in each state, and they choose a slate of electors. The Democrat Party chooses a slate of electors. And then who sits at the state capitol, which slate of electors sits at the state capitol on December 14th, is usually decided by a clear winner on election night. And in this case, you didn't have a clear winner on election night. And so both sets of electors cast their ballots on December 14th and mailed them off to Washington, D.C. So that's a long way of saying, yes, there have been two slates of electors sent from these states, but there is definitely, you know, legit questions as to which slate should be accepted, which should be opened by Congress.
And one final question here. I know people are sitting back, they're watching things unfold, whether it be in Georgia or what's taking place today in Congress, and many have the question, is there anything I can do whatsoever? Your response?
Absolutely, yes, and you need to start taking action. First, you've got to become a student of how this system works. As a citizen, as part of We the People, you are responsible for what your government looks like. In fact, Matthias Burnett, a reverend, said it this way 200 years ago. He said, we are responsible for and accountable for our rulers and our rights. Let not our children have reason to curse us for giving up those rights and frustrating those institutions. So we're responsible. There's nothing you can do today with regard to what's going to happen in Congress. I mean, you could still call your congressman and senator for sure, the more they receive. That's why you've got so many of them willing to object at this point. But where your real action is going to take place is after today, and that's going to be on the local level, getting people together in your living room or at your church or online and studying the Constitution, studying what the Bible says about how we should act as citizens. We've got a new course out just this week called Biblical Citizenship in Modern America. It's got Kirk Cameron in it and Matt Staver and David Barton and all these folks talking about what our role is as believers according to the Bible and according to our Constitution and what we can do to be the catalyst in our communities for restoring biblical values and constitutional principles.
And I know you agree with me. There's one thing everybody can do at this very moment, and that is to pray.
Oh, Jim, you're so right. I'm sorry I didn't even mention that, because, you know, that's the thing. Sometimes I think we've lost faith in that as a church. We don't spend that time on our knees asking for God's mercy. You and I both probably agree that, you know, in terms of our actions as a nation, we deserve judgment, but we've been praying for mercy. There is a remnant in our country that is, in fact, doing exactly what Second Chronicles asks us to do. And so we are, in fact, begging God for mercy for our country and to give wisdom and courage to our leaders in Washington, D.C. Pray for discernment for Mike Pence today. That would be a big thing to pray for. Pray for discernment on the part of those senators and congressmen that have some tough decisions to make. And then pray for discernment on the part of the courts, because a lot of this is probably going to be back in the courts over the next week or two.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being with us on a very busy day here today, Rick. And if you would, in closing, just give us a website where our listeners can go to.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate that. ConstitutionCoach.com is the easiest one to go to, ConstitutionCoach.com.
God bless you. Thanks for being with us today.
You too, Jim. God bless.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, geologist with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, we know that Mount Everest is the tallest mountain in the world. Was that also covered by the waters of Noah's flood?
Chris, the Bible says that the entire earth was covered by water, but I really don't think Mount Everest existed at the time of the flood. Mount Everest, and indeed all the mountain chains in the world, are made up of ocean bottom sediments. These sediments were deposited as mud at the bottom of the flood ocean. Late in the flood, they were uplifted into our present mountain chains. In fact, at the top of Mount Everest are fossils of ocean bottom clams. This does not mean that the flood water sloshed over Mount Everest. Sediments which now make up Mount Everest were deposited at the bottom of the flood ocean and then uplifted to form Mount Everest. Chris, the entire world was altered by the great flood of Noah's day. This we're told when we go back to Genesis.
You can find us on the web at www.icr.org.
listening to Crosstalk here on VCY America. And again, in that first segment, a pre-recorded interview I conducted this morning with Rick Green as it relates to the vote in Georgia yesterday and still results pending, especially in one of the races there, but also dealing with the electoral certification. By the way, do you know what happened this morning? Do you know what happened? Chuck Schumer declared himself Senate Majority Leader. And that Democrats have regained control of the Senate, even though one of the Georgia Senate runoff seats is yet to be called. He said it feels like a brand new day. For the first time in 6 years, Democrats will operate a majority in the United States Senate, and that will be very good for the American people, he said in a statement. Also, as of this morning, Ossoff led Perdue with a 50.19% of the votes to 49.81%, according to the New York Times. The Times estimated that about 73,000 votes in Georgia remain to be counted. Nancy Pelosi also released a celebratory statement this morning saying, and I quote, "Now, because of the courageous leadership of Georgians, Americans will have a Democratic Senate working hand in hand with our Democratic House majority and President-elect Joe Biden and Vice President-elect Kamala Harris," she said. End of quote. She also said, "We will pursue a science and values-based plan to crush the virus and deliver relief to struggling families, safeguard the right to quality, affordable health care, and launch a plan to build back better, powered by fair economic growth." Just so you know, folks, that is all buzzwords and key language for the Great Reset. We've done programs on that and more programming to come on that very issue. Also, yesterday, we had Jim Jordan among the Republicans who is objecting today to the congressional certification of the Electoral College vote in six swing states, because he said it's the only remedy left to correct these states, the end run around their legislatures. And he had more to say.
Well, you framed it up in the last segment with Professor Turley, Laura, when you said, what happens when there's an end run around state legislatures? That's exactly what took place in five states. We know that happened. You had state Supreme Courts, you had governors, you had Secretary of States. In some cases, you had county clerks unilaterally changing the election law in an unconstitutional fashion, because the Constitution is very clear. It's the legislature that sets the time, manner, and place of elections. So when that happens, there is only one remedy left. It is for the United States Congress to do their duty. And that's what I plan to do tomorrow, and so do several others. I think hundreds of my colleagues tomorrow. We hope it's a majority so that we can actually then have the United States Congress have the final say on this.
What prevents the Democrats, and you probably heard me mention this, but from doing the same thing next time they lose a presidential election? What prevents them from doing the same thing and keeping this going?
Well, the Democrats have already tried it when there wasn't an end run around state legislatures. They've tried it the last... Every time this century, every time there's been a Republican president elected since 2000, the Democrats have tried this when there was no basis. So, of course, they're going to keep doing it. The reason we're doing it is because the Constitution was not followed. Understand what happened here, Laura. First, they went after the president with the crazy Russian investigation before he was elected the first time in July of 16. Then it was the Mueller investigation. And there was nothing there. Then it was the impeachment hoax. Nothing there. None of that stuff works. So they said, you know what we have to do? We have to change election law so we can win the election in 2020. They'll do anything to make sure he's not president. But they couldn't change the election law in the normal way because the state legislatures were controlled by Republicans. So they couldn't put all their crazy rules in place. So they had to do an end run. They went to partisan Supreme Courts. They went to Secretary of States who were partisan. They went to in Pennsylvania, some counties allowed voters to fix their ballots. Other counties did it. You can imagine which counties allowed that. Totally against the election law. So when that kind of thing happens, we have a duty, we have an obligation as the final check and balance in this process to stand up for the Constitution and to stand up for the president.
That was Congressman Jim Jordan last night on Fox News as it related to only one remedy left, as he referred to check electoral end run around state legislatures. Well, this morning there was a rally held in Washington, D.C., Stop the Steal rally. It went on. It was quite a lengthy matter in which President Trump laid out the issues state by state as it relates to fraud And I'm just going to air one brief clip from that Stop the Steal rally this morning as he opened up that that time together.
Hundreds of thousands of American patriots are committed to the honesty of our elections and the integrity of our glorious republic. All of us here today do not want to see our election victory stolen by emboldened radical left Democrats, which is what they're doing, and stolen by the fake news media. That's what they've done and what they're doing. We will never give up. We will never concede. It doesn't happen. You don't concede when there's theft involved. Our country has had enough. We will not take it anymore. And that's what this is all about. And to use a favorite term that all of you people really came up with, we will stop the steal.
President Trump speaking this morning outside with the White House in the background. Many, many hundreds of thousands of people turning out will wait for that official count. But he challenged the media to turn their cameras around to show the crowds, of which the media was not doing by and large. But very interesting indeed. President Trump did call upon Vice President Mike Pence to send key battleground states' electoral results back to state legislatures during the joint session of Congress that began just not too long ago here today. And then we have from the EpicTimes.com, more than 60 Republican House representatives led by Representative Paul Gosar and one senator objected to Arizona's 11 electoral votes during the joint session of Congress today. Their objection complies with the law, said Vice President Mike Pence, the president of the Senate during the joint session of Congress. Gosar and Cruz were met with a standing ovation from what appeared to be GOP House members. Pence then ordered the two chambers of Congress to carry out a debate on the votes in Arizona, a several-hour debate scheduled and has been going on as the state's electoral votes before a simple majority vote is to be held. Before the session started, Vice President Pence released a statement through his office that the Constitution prevents him from rejecting electoral votes, responding to growing pressure that he should take action. I'd like to share with you the letter that Vice President Pence wrote January 6th. It says, Dear colleague, today for the 59th time in our nation's history, Congress will convene a joint session to count the electoral votes for President of the United States. Under our Constitution, it will be my duty as Vice President and as President of the Senate to serve as the presiding officer. After an election with significant allegations of voting irregularities and numerous instances of officials setting aside state election law, I share the concerns of millions of Americans about the integrity of this election. The American people choose the American president and have every right under the law to demand free and fair elections and a full investigation of electoral misconduct. As presiding officer, I will do my duty to ensure that these concerns receive a fair and open hearing in the Congress of the United States. Objections will be heard, evidence will be presented, and the elected representatives of the American people will make their decision. Our founders created the Electoral College in 1787 and its first convened in 1789. With the advent of political parties, the Electoral College was amended in 1804 to provide that electors vote separately for president and vice president. Following a contentious election in 1876 with widespread allegations of fraud and malfeasance, Congress spent a decade establishing rules and procedures to govern the counting of electoral votes and the resolution of any objections. During the 130 years since the Electoral Count Act was passed, Congress has, without exception, used these formal procedures to count the electoral votes every 4 years. Given the controversy surrounding this year's election, some approached this year's quadrennial tradition with great expectation and others with dismissive disdain. Some believe that as vice president, I should be able to accept or reject electoral votes unilaterally. Others believe that electoral votes should never be challenged in a joint session of Congress. After a careful study of our Constitution, our laws, and our history, I believe neither view is correct. The president is the chief executive officer of the federal government under our Constitution, possessing immense power to impact the lives of the American people. The presidency belongs to the American people and to them alone. When disputes concerning a presidential election arise under federal law, it is the people's representatives who review the evidence and resolve disputes through a democratic process. Our founders were deeply skeptical of concentrations of power and created a republic based on separation of powers and checks and balances under the Constitution of the United States. Vesting the vice president with unilateral authority to decide presidential contests would be entirely antithetical to that design. As a student of history who loves the Constitution and reveres its framers, I do not believe that the founders of any country intended to invest the vice president with unilateral authority to decide which electoral votes should be counted during the joint session of Congress, and no vice president in American history has ever asserted such authority. Instead, vice presidents presiding over joint sessions have uniformly followed the Electoral Count Act, conducted the proceedings in an orderly manner, even when the count resulted in the defeat of their party or their own candidacy. As Supreme Court Justice Joseph Bradley wrote following the contentious election of 1876, the powers of the President of the Senate are merely ministerial. He is not invested with any authority for making any investigation outside of the joint meeting of the two houses. If any examination at all is to be gone into or any judgment exercised in relation to the votes received, it must be performed and exercised by the two houses. More recently, as the former U.S. Court of Appeals Judge J. Michael Luttig observed, that the only responsibility and power of the vice president under the Constitution is to faithfully count the Electoral College votes as they have been cast, adding the Constitution does not empower the vice president to alter in any way the votes that have been cast, either by rejecting certain votes or otherwise. It is my considered judgment that my oath to support and defend the Constitution constrains me from claiming unilateral authority to determine which electoral votes should be counted and which should not. While my role as presiding officer is largely ceremonial, the role of the Congress is much different, and the Electoral Count Act of 1887 establishes a clear procedure to address election controversies when they arise during the count of the vote on the Electoral College. Given the voting irregularities that took place in our November election and the disregard of state election statutes by some officials, I welcome the efforts of Senate and House members who have stepped forward to use their authority under the law to raise objections and to present evidence. As presiding officer, I will ensure that any objections that are sponsored by both a representative and a senator are given proper consideration, and that all facts supporting those objections are brought before the Congress and the American people. Those who suggest that raising objections under the Electoral Count Act is improper or undemocratic ignore more than 130 years of history and fail to acknowledge that Democrats raised objections in Congress each of the last three times that a Republican candidate for president prevailed. Today it will be my duty to preside when the Congress convenes in joint session to count the votes on the Electoral College, and it will do so to the best of my ability. I ask only that representatives and senators who will assemble before me approach this moment with the same sense of duty and with an open mind, setting politics and personal interests aside, and do our part to faithfully discharge our duties under the Constitution. I also pray that we will do so with humility and faith, remembering the words of John Quincy Adams, who said, "Duty is ours, results are God's." And then he mentions 4 years ago. Tell you what, we're just coming up to the break, so I'm going to read you his final paragraph right after the break. Michael Pence, Vice President of the United States, signed this January 6th today as it relates to the vote going on in Congress regarding the certification of the Electoral College. I'll finish that letter right after the break. You're listening to Crosstalk. James 4:14 poses this thought: "For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time and then vanisheth away." Have you ever stopped to consider where you will spend eternity? You may say, "But I'm a good person. I care for my family. I feed the poor. I stand up for life and traditional values." While all of these things are good, they fall far short of God's standard. Every one of us has a sin issue that must be dealt with. Our sin separates us from God, and each of us deserves to be eternally removed from God in everlasting punishment. But out of God's great love, He sent His Son, Jesus Christ, to bear our sins, shed His blood, die on the cross, and rise again. He is the only way of salvation, and it's imperative for you to place your trust in Him. If you're wrestling with this issue, we'd like to send you a complimentary leaflet, "Where Will You Spend Eternity?" To receive a copy, just ask for it when you call us at 1-800-729-9829. 800-729-9829. You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America as we're talking today about the Georgia vote and the electoral certification taking place at the Capitol. And yeah, there's a lot taking place in D.C. right now. But let me just finish this letter here, the statement by Vice President Mike Pence. He concluded the letter by saying this: 4 years ago, surrounded by my family, I took an oath to support and defend the Constitution, which ended with the words, "So help me God." Today, I want to assure the American people that I will keep the oath I made to them, and I will keep the oath I made to Almighty God. When the joint session of Congress convenes today, I will do my duty to see to it that we open the certificates of the electors of the several states, we hear objections raised by the senators and representatives, and we count the votes of the Electoral College for president and vice president in a manner consistent with our Constitution, laws, and history. So help me God. Michael R. Pence, Vice President of the United States. Very interesting indeed, as there have been, according to some of the news sites here now, mayhem in some regards breaking out in Washington. They're reporting guns drawn on the House floor. We have McCarthy saying that he heard reports of shots fired as lawmakers are evacuated. There is also President Trump saying that Mike Pence did not have the courage to reject the electoral votes. D.C. mayor is issuing a citywide curfew amidst the protester and the U.S. Capitol lockdown. And very interesting information that is proceeding forth from Washington, D.C. From townhall.com, as Congress debates this Electoral College vote, legions of Trump supporters descended into the nation's capital for the Save America rally addressed by President Trump, then marched to Capitol Hill. And reporting there, Matt Vespa, that pandemonium broke out with Capitol Police besieged and overwhelmed. Madison Building had been evacuated. The House and Senate have been debating for up to 2 hours the Electoral College results of Arizona after an election or objection there was lobbied for by congressional Republicans. And they also report that we could expect to see this happen at least three times today. Earlier today, there was the evacuations and an all clear was given. There have been reports of even a bomb threat taking place in D.C. as well. And the matters are breaking as we speak in Washington, D.C. Let me get your reaction to these things here today that are going on as it relates to the Georgia vote, as it relates to the Electoral College certification vote. Our number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. Your reaction to the matters that are unfolding here today. 800-733-9829. It's our number to crosstalk today as we're taking a look at the Electoral College certification process. We understand that Vice President Mike Pence saying, "I don't have the authority." As you know, that there had been a lawsuit that had been filed against the vice president saying that he does have authority for this. And he fought that had responded in court to those aspects as well. But friends, just call in today, share your reaction to matters that are unfolding here at Washington, D.C., state of Georgia as well. We're going to begin with Mark in Monroe. Mark, your comments on the issue.
Okay, my comment is this. I hope today doesn't exemplify Vicki Lawrence's hit song, "The Night When the Lights Went Out in Georgia," when they hung an innocent president, figuratively speaking. That's my comment.
Okay. Thank you, Mark. Our phone number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. Susan in Milwaukee, your comments. Hello, Susan. Okay, Susan is gone, and we have a couple open lines here, a couple lines we're getting processed right now. 800-733-9829. Another breaking news here: President Trump asking for everyone at the U.S. Capitol to remain peaceful. Very interesting indeed. We understand there's the victim that has been shot and is being transported right now, but also calls for locking the doors there at the Capitol. troubling things going on. Let's go next to a caller from Wisconsin. You're on the air. Hello,
yes,
caller.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Yes, the only thing I have to say is that we just have to pray. It's in God's control.
We have to pray, indeed. Thank you for your call here today. We'll get our next call here momentarily. 800-733-9829 is the telephone number here today for Crosstalk, and we're going to line number one. You're on the air.
Well, thank you, Jim, for taking my call. I just pray that the truth comes out about the election, that we want righteousness to win, and we know that Trump stands for the Lord and the values of the Word of God. And I'd like to reinforce, thank you for BCY, and the most important election anyone will make in their life is electing the Lord Jesus Christ as their Savior. Thank you. I love you.
Thank you for the call. Bob in Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Jim, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Several weeks ago, there was a report from Brandon House and General McInerney about a server that was taken out of Germany by our special forces, and they said it would provide outstanding proof that there was tampering and, voting was interrupted because of this. Where is the proof? I'm on President Trump's side, but I ask myself every day, where and when will they present this proof?
I can attest to what the general said in regard to the voting equipment in Germany. I don't have that information, so I'm not privy to it. But as far as the proof, I mean, we have seen laid out many, many times the matters in Georgia, things that transpired there, the proof of the videotapes that showed after sending the poll watchers to send them home and people counting votes, that they brought out cases again filled with votes and doing it. The proof that's come from people who have signed affidavits talking about pristine ballots that were being run through, absentee ballots that had no folds in them whatsoever, proving that they could not have been put in absentee ballots. There are untold items, manifold items that have come forth in affidavits, but courts have, as you heard the guests say, yeah, that we interviewed, that have constantly turned, you don't have standing, sorry, you can't bring that forth, you don't have standing, and other excuses for them not to be able to lay it out in a courtroom fashion. Rudy Giuliani, we played a clip just yesterday about the number of deceased people that they had proof of in the state of Georgia. Actually, we played that on Friday, that laid out the number of dead people whom they confirmed through obituaries were dead at the time that they supposedly cast their ballot. So there's many of these that have been laid out, and many affidavits that have been filed by people with proof. Courts have refused to hear it.
And Jim, before I go, how can we get this in front of courts? Or isn't this the time now during these hearings to bring forth this proof? For these proofs?
Well, I'm guessing some of that is going on in the when they break up from their joint session to go into their individual chambers. I'm suspecting that very thing is going on.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much.
Sure. Thanks for calling. Carolyn Appleton, you're on the air.
This is such a sad, sad day for our country. The Bible teaches us to be peaceful. Many, many courts, including Supreme Court justices that Trump appointed, could not find any evidence.
No, it's not that they wouldn't hear the evidence. That's the issue, Carolyn. It's that they didn't find it. They wouldn't hear it.
As Christians, we need to unite and be peaceful. Trump is the Antichrist. We need to open our eyes and be aware of what he's done to our country.
The Antichrist?
We are no better
Carolyn,
off
than
Russia
said,
North Korea.
You said Donald Trump is the Antichrist?
You bet. And look closely.
Okay.
Right in there with Adolf Hitler.
Okay, well, when I see, when you listen, go back to the program that we conducted on the secular Democrats of America that are attacking all the Trump orders to preserve religious liberty in our land and for Christianity, here across our land. That is not a hallmark of the Antichrist. Another hallmark of the Antichrist is not preserving life, as President Trump has taken a stand for innocent human life, fought against abortion, fought against Planned Parenthood. That's not a mark of the Antichrist. Thank you so much for your comments, though, today, and I appreciate your listening. Scott in Inglewood, Florida, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Say, my personal opinion, what action that Vice President Pence took today did not catch me by surprise at all. Lynn Wood, his comments that he made about Vice President Pence, I think, are spot on. If anybody does just a deep dive on Vice President Pence, in my opinion, he's a kino, and that's not like it's similar to a rhino, but he's a Christian in name only. You can judge a tree by its fruit. And if the American people, Christians in particular, because once someone says, I'm born again and I love Jesus, they swallow it hook, line, and sinker, rather than vet what is said. And he just proved himself today. And I think in the days following today, we're going to find out a lot of things that might shock us about the vice president. So okay. Just my opinion. Thank you very much for your program. Appreciate the opportunity to speak my piece. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott. And that's what we're giving you opportunity to do, is to speak your piece, to speak your opinion on these issues. By the way, to the previous caller, there are people that called Ronald Reagan the Antichrist as well. Why? Because his name was Ronald Wilson Reagan. He had six letters in his first name, middle name, and last name. 666 must be the Antichrist. Let's go to Saxon, Wisconsin, and Kevin, you're on the air. Hello, Kevin.
Yeah.
You're on the air. Okay, let's move on to Kelly in Milwaukee. Kelly, you're on the air.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for taking my call. This seems like, from my point of view, that people that are just so frustrated, you see it in Washington right now, the proof for fraud just seems overwhelming, and for cyber attack and manipulation of the votes coming in the wee hours of the morning. And it's the first time in my life that I'm 60 years old, and it's the first time in my life that I've ever seen our voice completely taken away. And we're hoping for something in these hearings today to change that, but I don't believe we'll see it. It just seems like it's much deeper than we could have ever imagined, and it's I just sense a real frustration on the conservatives' part. And I mean, ultimately, my hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness. Mm-hmm. And you know, ultimately, we win, but it's still a frustrating day.
Thank you for your comments here today. Taking your reaction to matters that are going on today here across the nation as it relates to both the vote in the state of Georgia as well as to the certification matters going on in the U.S. Congress here today. And indeed, there's been a lot of chaos taking place there at the Capitol building, even with reports of shots fired. And folks, be in prayer with the very matters that are going on here today. We're up against a break. We'll take more of your calls following the break. You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website, worldviewreport.com. We have broken a new story with Mary Fanning and Alan Jones, national security authors and researchers. My friends, since November 1st, there has been one of the people that they've been working with and we've been talking about for a couple months now, the source. He has been capturing, as of November 1st and until the last few days, in real time, videotaping the steal of the 2020 presidential election. We have the article about it. at worldviewtimes.com. Not only did we have people involved in the U.S., but North Korea, Pakistan, Iraq, China, and Russia. Cyber warfare to put their people into power. Full details at worldviewtimes.com, and the article is there for you to read and distribute. We're at one of the most dangerous times in American history as enemies, foreign and domestic, are attacking our constitutional republic.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America, and getting your comments on the matters that are unfolding between yesterday's vote, the certification going on, and yes, indeed, some chaos out at the Capitol as well. And taking your comments on these issues, let's see, next in line, David, Mitchell, South Dakota, you're on the air.
Yes, if we don't have full public disclosure or discovery, then the court of public opinion will leave a cloud hanging over whoever becomes our next president, whether it's Biden or Trump. So it would make perfect sense to have a few days to have discovery in a court, because none of the courts have taken this case up, and none of it has been reported to the American public. So there's going to be a cloud over whoever is the next president, one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, David, for your thoughts. Let's go to another David, Phoenix, Arizona. David, what are your observations on the matters unfolding?
No, nothing. Just trying to, like I told the lady, I'm trying to figure out how this claim came about that Trump is the man of God when
that's
all
not
of his
been
actions
said.
Are complete opposite of that.
No, that's not been said. That's not been said here on the program. I don't know how long you've been listening here today, David, but that's not been said at all.
Yeah, well, they said that.
What's that?
One woman said that he was the Antichrist, right? And the host came back and said that he was quite the opposite. He was a man of God, and through his
No, that was not said, David. You can go back and listen to it. But indeed, what is his relationship with God? I don't know. I do pray for his salvation in that regard. But there have been positions taken by President Trump. We certainly would take issue with that. But what we have said is that he has stood for life, has stood for the protecting of innocent human life. He has stood for religious freedom as well through the actions that he has laid out as president, whereas a Biden administration is promising to take away those religious freedoms. So,
but he's also promoting violence among his followers. Instead of a peaceful transfer of power, he has people in the streets right now.
No, if you again, David, if you listen to the program, because I just read the breaking news story just moments ago, in which the president had called upon the people to be peaceful in that regard. So, thank you, David, and please go back and listen to the program if you would. Rodney in Phoenix, you're on the air.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Rodney. Yeah. You're on the air.
I just pray for our president, and I wish Pence would just take a stand for what he said he was going to do, taking a stand for the Constitution with the United States founded upon. All we can do is pray for this nation.
Yeah. Thank you, Rodney. Well, let's go to Tom, Port Wing. You're on the air.
Yes, Jim. I would like to implore all your listeners to do something very difficult, and that's to pray for Joe Biden, that he step forward and he do the right thing before he is labeled as the biggest liar in the world. Please, Joe Biden, step forward and admit what happened.
Okay, thank you, Tom.
Thank you.
Russ is next in Wausau, Wisconsin. You're on the air.
Hey, Jim, I just got a question regarding the enforcement of laws. We've seen back in early May riots being labeled as peaceful protests. I was just listening to public radio versus before I changed over to you, and they are calling what was transpiring in Washington, D.C. as anarchy, and they were labeling this as early as this morning. So I'm just curious as to how we separate what seems to be a bias towards democratic policing versus policing for the rest of us Americans.
How do we say? Yeah, there is a double standard. I'll say that much. We've seen that all throughout these last 4 years. A very much a double standard on the part of the media. Not sure how to rectify that other than to shut off the media that has been so, you know, fake in the news stories and so biased in that regard.
Sure, and I understand that, but you have a lot of people out there who are committing pretty heinous crimes who seem to be either getting a slap on the wrist or just dismissed completely through our court system.
Right, right.
And see that the what transpired this morning in Washington, D.C., prior to what is going on at the House of Congress right now, but prior to this, this was already being labeled as an anarchist-type movement when everything up until this point had been pretty peaceful.
Thank you, Russ. Thank you for raising the issue. Brad in West Dallas, you're on the air.
Hey, Brother Jim. The Supreme Court abdicated its responsibility when they refused to take the case that was brought before them when they had original jurisdiction, according to the U.S. Constitution. And the major media is refusing to report the truth. In fact, they're lying through their teeth even today. That's why a lot of people don't know what's going on, because they don't listen to WVCY. They don't listen to Brandon House. You got Pence refusing to do his duty and then coming out and saying that we're not going to put up with attacks on our Capitol. This is not an attack on the Capitol. I heard a couple of Fox News reporters talking with each other over the air on TV, and one of them was calling for the removal of these people, saying, well, when are they going to finally get somebody in here to move these people out of here? They would never say that if it was Black Lives Matter or Antifa. Then the other guy responded by saying something about it's tough for the police to make a call on that with these riots. Hmm. He referred to it as a riot. And you can see on TV it's anything but. It's just constant lies and lawlessness.
Thank you, Brad.
Thank you.
We're going to Bill Phoenix, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Jim. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to encourage the people to pray for Donald J. Trump, pray for America, and pray for righteousness, for truth and justice, and give this country patience and mercy, and we will prevail.
Thank you so much. I'm out of time here for the broadcast today, and apologize to others on hold, but the clock moves and doesn't give sway here for additional time. But friends, thank you for joining us. And as so many have pointed out, the important, critical need of praying for our nation in such a time as this. It's righteousness that exalts a nation. Sin is a reproach to any people. Lord willing, attorney Matt Staver will be with us tomorrow on Crosstalk discussing more of these issues. We trust you'll be able to join us for this interview. God bless you. Thanks for joining us here today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.